Welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and I'm inviting you to join me each and every week so together we can win the battle for business. Yes, that's right. And as always, hey, thanks for sharing some of your time with me today. Now, you know the Profit Express has been a champion of small businesses. It's what the show is all about. And to me, I've always looked at small business as one of the ultimate survivals of the fittest. And in normal times, each and every day for a small business is survival of the fittest, right? But we've all been, as you unfortunately know, we've been going through this lingering COVID economy since March of 2020. So when that did hit back in March of 2020, survival of the fittest took on a whole new meaning. Now, while big box corporations and online giants like Amazon, well, hey, they were allowed to keep on going, keep on doing business, and in the process make massive profits, so many small businesses in all of our communities across the country, they were forced to close, from the restaurants and the bars and the hair salons to the gyms and manufacturers. They had to close. Well, it was at that moment for so many businesses that tough decisions had to be made. Decisions that would really decide whether or not they would make it or not make it. They had to pivot. They had to get creative. They had to think about new ways to offer services safely, conveniently to their customers, new products and services to offer. And some didn't make it. As we all know, unfortunately, there were quite a few casualties in the new COVID economy, the lingering COVID economy that we're still dealing with. Now, I've had a number of small businesses on the show throughout the COVID economy, as you know, and they've shared their stories. And a lot of their stories are extremely inspiring. Some are heart-wrenching, if you will. But today I want to do something a little bit different. I want to have on somebody who could offer a very unique perspective. And who I chose to have on today, I'm actually personally a fan of her work. She has been a small business columnist following and covering the small business community here on Long Island for 20 years. She's currently a small business columnist with Newsday, which is one of the nation's premier top daily business newspapers in general. She's writing a small business column. She's Jamie Erslick. And I've been following her work for a number of years. As I said, I'm a big fan. Now, what makes her take very interesting and why I wanted to have her on today is, as I've been reading her columns throughout this pandemic, she has done what I will say is a great job at covering topics that matter, at covering topics that are relevant to not just businesses here in New York, which is where the show is based, where she is based, but really businesses all over the country. And again, what I found so appealing about her work and what she's doing is there's a lot of politics going on in business today, and she doesn't write about it. She doesn't get involved about it. She's just covering what matters to businesses, and she's sharing stories and ideas that can help all of us. So it's a great pleasure to welcome back on board the Profit Express, Jamie Erslick. How are you today, Jamie?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. I'm really glad to be here and, appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. It's definitely been a hard time. I mean, there's no playbook for this. We've never come across situation like this before. Right. So it's really, kind of having to be creative and survive on a, not even a weekly basis, on a daily basis. I mean, so many of those businesses just have had to pivot each day, let alone, used to create a plan for a week or a month. It's how do I survive the day? So thank you for having me.
Well, no, again, your perspective is very interesting because doing what you do as a columnist, you know, here in the New York community, the Long Island community, writing for Newsday, you have the opportunity to really kind of dig deep and spend a lot of time with a lot of different businesses and different industries, which is what we'll be getting into today. So one of the first things you said is there's no playbook for this, which is obvious, but man, that's really hits home because you've written for 20 years, so you've been through the economic collapse of 2008 and what happened with the banking collapse right there, and you've been through ups economies, down economies, and all that. But now here we are in the COVID economy. So what I'd like to know from your perspective, when did it hit you in covering stories that, wow, this is something different. This is going to have an impact on businesses like we have never seen before. Was there a moment for you as a columnist where you really just kind of took a step back and your hair got blown back on this one?
Yeah, I think, you know, when there was talk about, you know, shutdowns in March and we were hearing rumors and I was thinking, oh, you know, it's something that will, you know, be a blip and pass. And then, you know, when the shutdown happened, I think it immediately hit me, at least in New York, that this was like nothing we've ever seen. And this was going to have a rippling effect through small businesses and the economy. I mean, businesses having to shut their doors and figure out ways to reach their audiences and make their employees productive. I think the minute the shutdown happened, I was just like, this is going to be pretty unprecedented.
Well, yeah, you know, if we all think back to that period in March or April of 2020 when they thought, hey, you know, 2 weeks, we'll just kind of let this, you know, subside. We'll kind of lock down for 2 weeks and, you know, we know the rest of the story. But when businesses are shut down to the level and extent that they were, which, again, unprecedented, never happened before, it takes a lot of creativity, a lot of ingenuity. And listen, it's tough for a lot of small businesses that you cover because a lot of them don't have a lot of resources. You know, restaurants in particular, you know, that's a group of, that's an industry that has razor thin margins. And now they had to reinvent themselves, which, you know, is not easy. Do you have the resources? Do you have the capital, et cetera? So what I'd like you to share would be, what would be one story, perhaps one industry that you thought did a great job of, you know, being creative, reinventing themselves, particularly during the pandemic?
Yes, I mean, I would definitely point to restaurants in particular. Many of them had never done curbside. They didn't have the processes to do it. They didn't even have the mobile technology to take payments outside like they do now, and you know, with touchless credit cards and the mobile systems, the mobile terminals. All of a sudden they're told, you know, they have to shut down. And now there was, again, there was, you know, guidance was coming out, but they were all sort of, what do I do now? How do I reach the public? Plus they had the added hurdle of people were very concerned about other people touching their food. So you had no place for your patrons to go. And then you had people that didn't want to really go out or have anybody else handle their food. So they had to get creative really, really fast. I remember it was a deli, sort of a salad bar kind of place in Hauppauge. And he immediately, you know, put out like almost like a farmer's market of sorts on his front stoop. And then he was delivering actual produce to customers within a 5-mile radius. I mean, he had no plan for that. That was just, how do I survive? How do I pay my bills next week? Just so many places, you know, had to rethink the way they did business. And, you know, they weren't the big, big giants that were already doing, you know, curbside. Like we all see, you know, Applebee's has been doing curbside forever. Sure. You know, some of these places, it was all just, how do I reinvent the wheel? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, some didn't make it, not from lack of trying, just, you know, the inability to, you know, maybe they didn't have enough of a reserve, you know, to really fall back on. But, you know, I just saw others, there were so many things that they did. You know, I remember owners actually delivering food themselves in their cars. I heard stories of that, you know, they didn't have maybe staff to do it. So they got in their car and drove out there. I mean, it was just amazing. It was, and it's a rest, you know, the restaurant industry is still hit hard now because of the worker shortage. So, you know, they're still having to be creative. And what are we on? It's almost a year plus from the pandemic, and they are still having to find ways to keep open with a lack of workers. So I got to give them a lot of credit for those that were able to survive and are still surviving.
Well, certainly, like you said, I think we can all think back to, you know, produce deliveries from restaurants, like you said, totally out of the box thinking, certain things that a year prior they never would have even considered. And, you know, if you're not prepared if your restaurant doesn't have a drive-through, it doesn't have curbside. You know, it's not an easy thing just to flip the switch on that. So again, yeah, a lot of credit to the restaurants who did survive through this. Now, you mentioned something that's very, very important. We had the extended unemployment benefits. And they're, you know, in the hospitality, in the food and beverage industries, where a lot of those workers were relying on and became, I don't say accustomed to, but they took advantage of the unemployment benefits and they were not going back to work. And now you're seeing all over the place these signs for signing bonuses at restaurants, signing bonuses at car washes. What has been, you know, what conversations have you had with owners? I mean, what are they doing? Is it something that they can even afford to do? How long do they think they'll have to do it for?
Well, it was interesting. I just did a piece where I spoke to a few restaurateurs in the Hamptons, and it's really become a game of who has the most money and who has the deeper pockets in attracting workers. Because some of them, you know, will get workers, and then somebody else will say, "Hey, I'll pay you an exorbitant amount to go work for me," and you know, they lose the employee. So,
it's become a bidding war.
It's become a bidding war where they could afford it. You know, in the Hamptons, you have deeper pockets. Sure. You know, it's a little more challenging in other areas, but at least some of these Hamptons guys were getting really creative. One actually was purchasing housing in Sag Harbor in Southampton and offering that as a perk, saying, "Hey, work for me." And, you know, it costs a lot to rent in the Hamptons, but he was offering below market rent. So he's actually literally buying houses so he could attract staff. Which was kind of interesting. And again, not every restaurateur can really do that.
Right.
There are others that were, you know, having a sign-on bonus for a certain amount of time, you know, by mid-September, come work for me. You get, you know, $1,000 sign-on bonus, $500 when you arrive, $500 right. if you stay a month. You know, they're doing it up island too. Sign-on bonuses has become a really popular incentive for food service delivery, just across the board, more so than some of the HR people I spoke to said this is the most they've ever seen sign-on bonuses being used as an incentive.
Sure.
More flexible work time. I mean, companies are having to get really creative because just about every industry is hurting for workers. And it's not, I know that you know, people are quick to say it's the unemployment benefits, and that may be a factor, but I did speak to an analyst about that recently. And it also is, you know, you have an aging population on Long Island. So many of the workers might have decided with COVID, hey, you know, it's time for me to you know, bail out, retire. Some switch to entrepreneurship so they can control their own hours. And others have childcare and elder care issues. You know, they may not have with COVID, the ability to, you know, be at work and home. And if they're brought back to the office, they may have to choose, you know, taking care of a child or an aged, elderly, sick person, you know. So there are multiple reasons for the shortage. I know people like to go to the go-to one is unemployment benefits, but it's truly not the only reason. I'm not saying it isn't a reason, but it's definitely not the only reason at play here.
Well, that's interesting. You know, listen, that's the reason I went to the unemployment benefits, which, again, everybody talks about. I hadn't considered, that's an interesting perspective, Jamie, how, you know, aging population, people not wanting to return to the workforce, working remotely, even entering entrepreneurship on their own, becoming their own business owners. Again, all things that can certainly impact, you know, getting the necessary people to fill the positions. So, here you have a situation where you think, you know, we're kind of talking about restaurants here for a while, but let's go to like the business-to-business world and networking, which is a huge part of the mix in business development and sales, if you will, in the B2B world. Trade shows, networking events have not happened. They've tried to put them on here locally on Zoom or some variation thereof. How successful they were, I don't know. But now we have these Delta variants. And I was on the phone with sales professionals today, clients of mine, in different states, in Louisiana and in Florida, and they're still not seeing events out there. And, you know, when you think it's safe to get back in the water, this Delta variant comes around, and now we still don't see live events. What are you seeing? Are some businesses trying to do it in a different creative way, or are we still going to try to do it virtually? I'd be very interested to get your take on that.
Yeah, I actually just did a poll recently for one of my stories on what some of the major Long Island groups and some other groups, actually national too, were thinking of doing, you know, come this fall and winter with Delta looming. You know, there's been many New York City shows that have pulled the plug already and, you know, have decided to just, you know, not go forward. But right. There are a lot of folks that are, you know, trying to keep going, and they are monitoring the situation, and most have, the ones that are going live have some sort of hybrid element. So they might have some of the seminars available for people who are uncomfortable to come to watch via Zoom, but they polled their audiences, and a lot of them really did want to get back to face-to-face networking. Mm-hmm. So many of them, at least locally, were trying to go forward. A couple of them moved to later in the year or next year, but there was a real feel that people want to get back to face-to-face, but with proper precautions. So, like, there was a big national trade show that I interviewed an exhibition specialist for, and it was pretty cool because they were using wristbands. So, you know, green meant, you know, shake my hand, do whatever you like. Yellow was basically, you know, fist bumps, elbow bumps. And they had a placard that kind of said this. So if you saw somebody's wristband, and red was stay away. You know,
are you serious?
Yeah, wait, they were using it at a few trade shows, yellow, green, red wristbands. And then they would have it at the check-in table, what the wristband meant. So, you know, there's a propensity for people to want to come up to you sometimes and give you a big old hug.
Sure.
And, you know, but, you know, you have a red wristband, stay back. So I thought that was pretty cool. Most places are still masking, guests to mask. Not everybody's testing right now unless some of the regulations change. I haven't heard really a lot of people requiring a negative COVID test or vaccination proof yet. But I do find that masks, they're doing distancing. Some are eliminating buffets and doing single serve, you know, lunch packages. So you never touch, you know, open air food. So they're trying to do it. We'll see how it goes as the months progress.
So this, the interview that you did with this particular event, this is for a current trade show that they're putting on. Did I get that right?
It was the one with the wristbands was one that just recently happened.
Okay, yes. So recently happened. So now when you think about it, so as I'm hearing you, Jamie, and today's guest is Jamie Erslick, and she is a small business columnist. She's been covering small business here on Long Island for 20 years, and she writes for Newsday as a small business columnist. Follow her. She does great stuff, and, of course, the content that she shares applies to businesses all over. So you're sharing this, you know, wristband, you know, red, you know, stay away from me, yellow, proceed with caution, and green for go. You think, okay, wow, that makes sense. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, do you want to be the kind of person walking through a trade show with a red wristband on? Like, people are going to look at you, and you know?
Maybe. It's just,
you know, are you the close talker? Stay away from me. My goodness, wow, that is, it's amazing the kind of conversations we're having just to do something that, and it's funny, we took for granted a trade show. We've taken for granted networking events. We've taken for granted, you know, and our ability to do them. Now, so here's something funny, Jamie. My lovely Profit Express mug, as you can see, as I'm shamelessly plugging and taking a sip of water out of, this is the prototype. I only have one of these mugs. Okay, so I handle it very carefully. I placed an order for these mugs, I kid you not, in May And I just, by utter coincidence, got an email saying they're coming in, and now we are in the middle of September. I have some customers in manufacturing. Their raw materials are being held up. We've all heard of the disruption of the supply chain affecting so many of us. What have you heard, and how are businesses dealing with it?
Yeah, it is a real problem. I recently did an article about it because a lot of the buyers, you know, that put out goods and services have to start, you know, by now, you know, placing orders for holiday sales. And
sure,
there is a terrible, you know, transportation issues overseas. You have some of the ports were impacted by inclement weather over the summer. Some of the ports in China were hit with COVID outbreaks. And you already had a really tight supply chain from COVID from last year. Sure. So it's just a perfect storm of disruption, really, in the supply chain world. Businesses down to the littlest businesses are feeling it. I spoke to a woman who makes scrubs and lotions, and she's prepping for the holidays, and she gets her parts for her, say, her pumps. You know, she needs the parts for the pumps to put her lotions in, and she would used to, you know, pre-COVID, order it on a Monday and get it by the end of the week. And now it's taking 4 to 6 months. So what she did was she actually had to turn her massage room that she was using for massages as an extra source of revenue into a supply room now, because she has to double and triple order all of her supplies just to ensure that she can meet her holiday orders, basically. And that's what I'm hearing from so many businesses that rely on goods and products for to make their own products or to dispense their own products. They are having the hardest time trying to get product from overseas. So, you know, what are they doing? They're having to, like her, double and triple order like they've never done. They have to budget for that, of course. Some are having to, you know, discontinue products and look for other products. I talked to a gentleman who makes modular homes, and he can't get certain type of deck railing that he always had. So he had to actually look to alternative products. And actually that turned out to be a good thing because he found his customers liked it. So now he has another product option. But it truly is going to be a major issue for consumers. It's going to mean that they may not get all the gifts they want. They may have to, you know, wait or shift gears or look a lot of different places to find what they need. So it's going to make for an interesting holiday season.
Well, here we are. We kind of start off the show talking about how small businesses need to pivot when the pandemic first broke. And now we're talking about supply chain disruption, and it's pivoting yet again, you know, from the direct and the indirect impact of the pandemic. And especially for a lot of these retail businesses, you know, before you know it, the holiday season will be upon us. And for a lot of them, that's a make or break season that really sets them up for success, or I should say profit or lack of profit for the year. It's all these different angles that you don't think about.
Exactly. It's a constant pivot, and then a pivot, and then when you think you pivoted, another pivot. So basically, that's what it's become.
Yeah, and listen, you don't mean to, you know, laugh or take it lightly, but that's the reality of it. And listen, let's face it, like you gave that one example of the company that needed the deck rails, and they found an alternative that the clients like. So there'll be examples of that. But the irony in this, and I see that in some of my own clients, their sales are doing well. So it's not like they're, you know, they're starving for sales. They have orders that they can't fill. Like I said, with my own mugs, you know, I'm just now getting them, and it's been 4 months. And you think, wow, just a promotional mug. How crazy could that be? But it's there. And I think it's, from what I'm seeing, tell me if you agree or if you see something differently, I think it's impacting just about every industry. It's not really focused. It's across the board, no?
Yeah, it's definitely across industry. I mean, I just mentioned a few, from the modular homemaker to the person who's making, you know, the scrubs and lotions. But, you know, I hear about it from just everyone. I mean, even, you know, even people that have to just rely on basic, you know, shipping for their business. You know, the carriers are themselves, you know, have backlog that they're trying to deal with. And they're trying to add employees, obviously, you know, for the summer and find different ways. But, you know, if you don't have, you know, the ability for the ports to, and there's a labor shortage, this is adding to it, a labor shortage at the ports, at all the key ports that actually, you know, take the products off of the ships and load them into the different, you know, trucks and planes that need to get it to other places.
Sure.
So, you know, if you don't have the ability to get yourself into those containers as a retailer or a small business, then, you know, you're going to be impacted on every level. You know, if you ship in any way, and most, you know, many small businesses, you know, have to rely on shipping to some degree. So you're right. It's really across the board. And it's definitely going to be a challenging time. And, you know, small businesses will again have to, you know, kind of navigate and deal with that.
Yeah, I heard a story, it was a while ago, a number of months ago, but where container ships in the port of Los Angeles, which is one of the major ports for America, they were actually sitting, you know, in the queue, just waiting for weeks and even into like a month and beyond, where the you know, the cargo, the inventory is just sitting there, couldn't even be offloaded. So, yeah, talk about the, you know, a ripple effect, if you will. Now, one thing, so, and again, you know, I love this conversation, and we could take any one of these points, Jamie, and make a whole show out of it. And I'm just trying, you know, in knowing all the articles that you've written, I'm trying to just talk about as many things that are catching my attention, because they're catching the attention of the listeners, because the listeners are being impacted by so much of what you write about, you know, in your column for Newsday. So let's shift a bit back to the employee now, because let's face it, COVID has impacted so many of us economically, emotionally. Some of us have lost family members, of course, which can no doubt be devastating. Have you written, I don't recall an article, forgive me, particularly on this topic, but what have you heard, whether you've written about it or just in your own research, on the impacts of anxiety? And, you know, now employers, with everything else that they have to think about, all the issues that we just spoke about, supply chain, et cetera, how are employers having to deal with and help their employees with the issues of anxiety and coming back to work?
It's a big issue. You know, people just have been impacted on so many levels with COVID. You know, mm-hmm. you have a workforce that for, you know, months upon months was, you know, working in their homes, and that's stressful to a great degree, especially if you have, you know, you're caring for either, it could be a parent, it could be, you know, children. You know, they're dealing with the stresses of working, you know, taking care of kids and doing everything that's required at the home. And, you know, some of them have been impacted financially. Maybe one of them or their partner lost a job.
Sure.
You know, so you already have people that are anxious at home, and now there many companies have, you know, opened back up their offices, even if it's, you know, half a week, or it may not be a full week, but they're bringing employees back. And from what I've been hearing from employers, you know, there is pushback. You know, the employees are worried about being in an office setting again. You know, there's Delta now looming and other variants, and mm-hmm. you know, they're concerned. Some of them have, you know, elderly parents living with them, and you know, if they come back with some sort of variant, you know, that could be devastating at their home. So there, I heard one HR manager say to me that, you know, she's kind of become like a psychologist to people, because, you know, they, you know, the HR used to be like, you know, very structured and defined, but now, you know, she's having to talk to people and kind of tell them, you know, it's going to be okay. And, you know, the best companies that are doing it, I guess, the most productive way are, you know, mm-hmm. communicating frequently and often what are the expectations? You know, what are they doing to keep you, the employee, safe? You know,
right.
You know, what kind of things, what kind of protocols, what can you expect walking back into that office? What is it going to look like? And I find that the companies that are paying attention to those little details are really having the best success with their employees. Because it's not business as usual. As businesses are opening up, it is still not business as usual, and you can't operate under the old assumptions. Also, one of the issues I found happening is people have been in their own homes among their own families, and they have a lot of opinions, you know, they have a lot of political opinions. They have a lot of opinions about vaccines.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's okay in their home, but then there's a lot of, you know, struggle in, you know, with people coming back and vocalizing that in the workplace and other people, you know, taking offense to it or being upset by it. So people have to learn, I guess, how to, be in an office setting again where it's, you know, you're going to have these very strong opinions, and how do you kind of navigate all that? It's a lot for employers and, you know, employees to kind of navigate, but, you know, it's all happening now as the valve opens up. And it's definitely something that employers have to deal with. And it's sometimes it's tougher for small businesses because they don't have a lot of them big HR departments to devote teams to this. You know, sometimes it's the small business owner has to take the reins on this. You know, it's not, they don't have a staff of HR people. Some are lucky to have outsourced HR person so they could call someone. Oh, employee assistance programs, EAPs, have taken off from what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Those are programs that are offered by the company, mm-hmm. and the employee can call for counseling, complaints, anonymous complaints. It offers a wealth of services to the employee that's totally confidential, and a lot of companies have brought those on as we've been opening up the valve and returning people to the workplace.
Yeah, I'm very glad that we actually touched upon this topic, because listen, anxiety is a very serious thing, and you know, I always encourage employees, you know, to take advantage of those EAP programs that you mentioned. But I laughed, but it's funny, but it's serious, Jamie. And it's a very important topic that I never considered. When you are an employee and you've spent the last year in the four walls of your own home, maybe in a living room somewhere or a den as your kind of quasi office or workspace. And listen, let's face it, you know the show's not political. I'm not going to get political, but there's been a lot of divisiveness. There's been a lot of opinions on either side, and we know that. And it's an important thing, and you said it very well, and I really never thought about it. But when people start going back to the workplace, they're going to have opinions on both sides. And you know what? Somebody's going to get offended. And that's another consideration for employers to think about. But man, wow, this is... I knew we were going to be talking about a lot of topics today, but you exceeded my expectations about the important topics out there. So with so much going on and everything, all the stories that you've been covering, you know, since this broke, and again, I got to say I'm a big fan. I've been following your stuff for a long time. You just write a great content. I'm not trying to make your head swell here, but it's just great content that really applies.
Thank you.
No, I'm serious. It's just great content it's not New York based. It's universal. It's for small business owners anywhere. You know, the people that are listening to the show today. So is there that one article that you wrote that really kind of, that one story that you wrote in this pandemic that you look back on and you were really amazed at what they did or how they did it? Anything stand out for you?
There are so many stories I told.
I know.
It was almost like when, you know, it's very different, but when I covered Sandy and Hurricane Sandy and the businesses and how they had to rebuild and how and what they did, you know, there was a lot of standouts with, you know, Superstorm Sandy and now with this. I mean, there's some interesting ones. There was a pathology lab, you know, that always, you know, that did blood work and for doctors, and doctors weren't getting patients coming in anymore. And, you know, the lab, you know, lost like, you know, 90% of its business. And they actually went to and pivoted to COVID testing, and it basically, you know, saved the day, so to speak, because they were able to, now their business is back with doctors because doctors have reopened their office, but they were able to use, you know, they had to invest in some new technology and equipment, but they were able to use, you know, the basics of what they did to pivot into, you know, the COVID testing world. I'm trying to think of, there's just so many stories. There's, I love, you know, I love craft fairs, and I've interviewed a lot of businesses from them. They're small, they're hungry, they're feisty. And there was a woman that I've come across for over a decade at these craft fairs. She makes soaps, and she, you know, her livelihood was attending fairs. Okay, well, what happens? There's no fairs. There's no festivals.
Right,
what happens?
Right.
Okay, so your revenue, you know, revenue dries up in literally a minute. So she started saying, okay, what do I do best? Okay, I make soap, and I make, you know, different soap-related products. And so she started putting them together as a soap making kit, and she put her soap making kits online, and people bored with their kids, you know, bought them. And then she'd do some Zoom presentations on how to use the ingredients that you just bought to make soap. And she really took off, and she actually got new customers that had never discovered her, because she promoted it all through Facebook Live and things like that. And now when she's able to go to fairs and things like that, she has a whole new audience. So there's so many stories that, you know, come to mind. And again, it's just, it's taking, you know, what you know and what you did, and then just trying to find a new way to do it. And the, you know, that person didn't have a huge budget to go, you know, spending all this millions of dollars on advertising.
Sure,
you know, they used the tools they had. They used Facebook Live, you know. I guess there's just like just so many great examples. I'm always, you know, encouraged by the small business community, because they will find a way as hard, and they'll fight. If they don't find a way, they'll fight until they have to close their doors. But I've seen it after, you know, tragedies like 9/11 and the economic downturn of 08 and 09 and Superstorm Sandy and the pandemic. And there's just a common theme is that they really, you know, really get creative. They're able to pivot a lot quicker than larger companies because they don't have the infrastructure and the, you know, heavy overhead and things like that. They could, you know, they don't have to run it by a million people. You know, they just have some benefits, and they always find a way to use them. And again, there are many businesses that didn't survive, but I feel it like it wasn't from a lack of trying.
You know, it's funny as you're sharing your experience, having gone through the pandemic as a columnist and somebody who covers small business, it's really what I started the show off with. It was the ultimate survival of the fittest. And yes, there were some casualties. There were some great businesses and great restaurants that we all know and love that unfortunately didn't make it. And to your point, not that they didn't try and they went down fighting. And I'm almost getting emotional just saying this and hearing you talk about it. But my God, I mean, that's what's so exciting to me. That's why I love doing the show. That's why your article is great, and you give a voice to small businesses on Long Island. Because, you know, you hear about the big box stores that were allowed to stay open and the Amazons, you know, to them is what I say, in my opinion. But again, I want to thank you, A, for coming on board. It's been a great conversation. Thanks for covering small business here on Long Island. People want to follow you and your work. How can they do that, Jamie?
Well, they could definitely follow me on Twitter. I'm under my name, at Jamie Herzlich. They also could, you know, friend me on LinkedIn. I post my articles there as well. Every Monday I'm in Newsday, and that's also available online at newsday.com. So you could pretty much find me in all of those places. And I hope, you know, what I write helps. And just happy to be able to tell, you know, stories and try to get some advice out there to get through this pandemic, because we're all really affected by this pandemic at every level, you know, on personal level, business level. We're all, you know, battling some battle through this. So I just appreciate the ability to have a voice and give others a voice, and also have the support of, you know, our readers. So thank you for having me. It was just a wonderful conversation.
Well, no, thank you. And again, thanks for what you're doing. Small businesses deserve a voice, and you do a great job covering it. So again, today's guest, Jamie Erzlich, small business columnist for Newsday here in Long Island. She's been covering the small business community here for 20 years. Definitely follow, check out her work. And this is the Profit Express. Each and every week, you know what we're doing here. We're winning the battle for business. As always, thank you for sharing your time with me. New episodes, just like the great one with Jamie today, download each and every Wednesday. So follow me on Instagram at The Profit Express, on Twitter at Profit_Express. And until next time, let's keep winning that battle for business.